I'm Rick Gamble. This is NHPR News.
I'm Laura Kanoy, and this is The Exchange. The Affordable Care Act became law in early 2010, but was never intended to go into effect all at once. In fact, the statute spells out a timetable of steps that federal and state officials are supposed to take year by year before the law's full implementation in 2014. But almost from the start, that timetable's been thrown off by political opposition and legal challenges. Now, though, with a Supreme Court decision upholding the law and the president reelected, states around the country, even those where opposition was strong, are realizing that next year they need to get moving if they're to meet that 2014 deadline. That's the case here in New Hampshire, where state officials are feeling the pressure as the new year approaches. And one of the first steps they'll have to take is considering the expansion of Medicaid under the law in a way that benefits both low-income residents and the state budget. Today in The Exchange, a new year brings new urgency in terms of health care in New Hampshire. Let's hear from you. What questions do you have about what's next for this law here in the Granite State? How do you see it affecting you so far as an individual or as an employer? And what do you hope happens next year as the 2014 deadline approaches? Give us a call. The Exchange number is 1-800-892-6477, 1-800-892-NHPR. Send us a short email if you'd like, exchange@nhpr.org, or post a comment on our Facebook page or on the Exchange page at nhpr.org. We have three guests with us in studio. Tom Bunnell is here, policy analyst for New Hampshire Voices for Health, which promotes affordable health care in the state. Tom, welcome back. Nice to see you.
It's great to be with you, Laura.
Also with us, Jeb Bradley, Republican State Senator from Wolfboro, Senate Majority Leader and past Chairman of the Health and Human Services Committee. And Senator Bradley, good to see you too. Thanks for taking
the time.
Laura.
How are you?
And also with us, Todd Bookman, NHPR's health reporter. And obviously, he's been following this story closely. And Todd, thanks for giving us some time this morning. Appreciate
sure,
it. Well, and Todd, you reported just recently on health policy getting a reboot, as you put it, after the election, where you said state governments around the country maintain a solid level of anxiety about this, including here in New Hampshire. What's the anxiety about, Todd?
Well, this is just a major overhaul of how healthcare gets bought and sold, how people receive it and use it. And it's something that I think a lot of people just can't really predict the impact of. And there's still a lot of unknowns, even in New Hampshire. In my story, I quoted Senator Bradley as calling the Medicaid expansion decision really the single biggest issue that lawmakers will face this year. And the question is still very much up in the air. We've got a democratically held House, a Democrat in the governor's office who are supporting expansion, but we've got a Republican held Senate who may balk, quite frankly, at the price tag. And so there's just a lot up in the air. And then we've also got the issue of healthcare exchanges. Deadlines seem to be coming and going. There was another one today. And so there's just a lot still to be sort of hammered out related to the Affordable Care Act.
Yeah, it's interesting. So a lot of political uncertainty, how these different pieces of the act will be approached. And yet, Todd, you know, this has been on the books for almost 2 years now. So
right.
It's
and
not unfamiliar.
Right. And the deadlines keep coming. And it's been implemented sort of slowly, but here it is. And we've got sort of very big decisions to make and a lot of uncertainty about what's going to happen.
Are you feeling some anxiety about this, Senator Bradley?
Yeah, absolutely. And I, you know, don't want to be in the position of just saying no, as some people around the country are. I think it's important that we examine the implications and the facts for New Hampshire. And, you know, understanding that it is the law of the land at this point, it's going to be implemented. But there still are significant choices that states have. And Todd touched on, you know, whether we should expand Medicaid. The flip side to that is there are going to be a significant amount of new subsidies for people that otherwise might have qualified under Medicaid through the exchanges. And so I don't think it's an all or nothing approach at this point. And I think given that we're reshaping 1/6 of the United States economy represented by healthcare, that a look before you leap approach is one that is reasonable for New Hampshire.
Yeah, 1/6 of the economy. It's a good point. It makes you realize how huge this is, Senator Bradley.
Yeah, and people are speculating that there could be as many as 75 to possibly even 100 million people that will utilize the exchanges. So I go back to when I was in Washington and supported the expansion of the Medicare drug benefit, so-called Part D, that had similar amount of time to be implemented, and the smallness of expanding a drug benefit under Medicare that was all privately run, quite frankly, and how confusing and difficult that was, to say nothing of what these exchanges will mean, what the expansion of Medicaid will mean, the implications for individuals, for small businesses and large businesses. This is huge. It is 1/6 of the economy, and it's going to affect all Americans. And so in terms of committing New Hampshire to whether it's an exchange or the Medicaid expansion, I really want to know the implications for our state before we, as I say, look before we leap.
And just to be super clear, Senator Bradley, and anybody please correct me if I'm wrong, Medicaid right now is a federal-state partnership. It covers low-income Americans and also some people with disabilities. And under the Affordable Care Act, Senator Bradley, this is supposed to expand greatly. 30,000 to 50,000 people here in New Hampshire could be eligible who aren't eligible today.
Yeah. Currently, the threshold for many categories of Medicaid is about 75% of poverty. It's higher than that for pregnant women with children and other categories. But the federal law says that anybody at 138% of poverty should be covered by Medicaid. There are pluses and minuses to that, which I'm sure we'll get into, but those are the facts on it. And the federal government has pledged to pay for the first 10 years, 100% for 3 years, then on a sliding scale down to 90% for 10. But seeing what's happening in Washington right now with a fiscal cliff, to me, that's another huge question mark.
And Tom Bunnell, the exchanges are these sort of shop online sites like Travelocity, a website where you can compare airfares. This is where you could compare coverage and cost of various health insurance providers. Those are the exchanges that are supposed to help provide coverage for other folks who aren't low income enough to qualify for Medicaid. Is that right?
That is correct.
Yeah. So where do you see New Hampshire at this point? Are we on target in terms of the Affordable Care Act? Are we a little behind? Where are we at, Tom?
Well, I wanted to go back to the Medicaid expansion for a minute, and Senator Bradley was very eloquent about it. But just to add a few things, the Medicaid expansion would offer coverage to all adults in New Hampshire between the ages of 19 and 65 who are not currently eligible for Medicaid and whose incomes are up to 138% of the poverty level. So that translates to, for an individual person, it's about $15,500 a year. For a family of four, it's about $32,000 a year. And so we're talking about the lowest income and most vulnerable New Hampshire adults who don't have access to quality, affordable health insurance coverage now. So, I mean, the folks we're talking about are – or at least this population includes low-income working New Hampshire residents who, for example, serve you coffee in the morning, sweep and vacuum the floors at work, fix your car, cut your hair, work in a full range of local shops and stores in our communities throughout the state, or who even provide in-home services to – seniors and to folks with disabilities in their homes, or even who teach and care for our children in child care centers. So they are friends and neighbors and family members and colleagues.
Whose employers don't currently provide them health insurance
correct,
in most cases?
Correct, or whose employers are struggling mightily now to try to provide them with affordable health insurance coverage that either is not affordable already for them to elect or in fact once the ACA is implemented in small businesses, employers who are struggling so much with affordability may decide to no longer cover those employees who are low-wage earners who would qualify for Medicaid. So I would like to say one more thing about Medicaid expansion if I could, and that is that the Department of Health and Human Services in New Hampshire commissioned, with funding from the Endowment for Health and the New Hampshire Charitable Foundation, a comprehensive data analysis and study of the benefits and costs of the Medicaid expansion. And they're doing a report that's being released in two parts. The first part was released in mid-November. And just judging from that report, this is quite a fiscal bargain for New Hampshire. So I would just add to that what the Lewin Group concluded in that first report was that the Medicaid expansion would cover 58,000 people in New Hampshire. It would also bring in $2.5 billion over 7 years, over the first 7 years, in federal revenues for New Hampshire, while also costing our state, and the baseline general fund number over 7 years is $85 million. That's without doing Medicaid managed care. If we do Medicaid managed care, it's actually $69 million. So put this in some perspective, and I'll move on. That $2.5 billion is nearly a 3,000% return on investment, sort of a startling return of $2.5 billion for the expenditure of $85 million in state funds. Or for a bit more perspective, that $85 million in state general funds, that cost represents less than a 2% increase over what New Hampshire would be spending on our Medicaid program.
So we get lots of bang
anyway,
for the buck.
We sure do.
Is the bottom line of what you're saying.
We absolutely
do. And I also want to invite our listeners to join us, gentlemen. Our number here in the exchange is 1-800-892-6477. And Jillian's calling in from Hudson. Hi, Jillian. Thanks for joining us. You're on the air.
Hi. I have a question about Medicaid expansion. I've heard that, since it was with the Supreme Court saying, it's optional now, that it's kind of in a weird place because, some people would be, left out, whereas other people would be getting some help that have higher incomes than some of the people that are left out. So I just wanted to hear about, what's happening with these people that are going to be left out, and why, would lower income people get less help than, more moderate income people?
Todd, can you jump in there? And then I want to hear from our other guests as well. Go ahead, Todd.
Sure. So there's basically this loophole, this donut hole of people in New Hampshire that wouldn't be able to receive the subsidy from the federal government. These are people that make, I believe the number is less than 100% of the federal poverty line. So if the state chooses to not expand Medicaid, that group of people, so we're talking about folks basically less very low-income people, wouldn't be eligible for Medicaid if they do not have children or a disability but are in that low-income bracket, but they also wouldn't be then eligible for the subsidies from the federal government. And so
to participate in the exchanges, Todd?
Well, they can still participate in the exchanges, but they're not going to get any sort of financial help to buy their insurance. And so the state, the federal government, really isn't sure how to handle that group of people.
Well, that's a big if, though, isn't it, Todd? I mean, these are the people who wouldn't be covered if the state doesn't expand Medicaid, but Governor-elect Hassan has said she wants to do that.
She does want to expand, and I think we'll get a lot of movement in the House to expand, but there's a big price tag, and the budget is tight, and I think Senator Bradley could help explain this, that there may not be this drive. So,
all right, and we will tackle that after a very short break. Jillian, thanks for the question. You can join us with your questions and comments at 1-800-892-6477. We'll be right back.
I think that the intelligence of the programs is riveting, honestly. There is even ones that I feel like possibly aren't really going to be that interesting to me. I'm still drawn into them by the points of view that are brought forth because it's very balanced. I'm not only drawn to the balance, but I'm drawn to the depth that most often is really explored. Everything really makes me think, challenges some of my preconceptions, and I feel like I grow and I learn by listening to The Exchange. My name is Lynn Krikorian. I'm from Manchester, and I am a sustaining member of NHPR.
Good morning. I'm Taylor Quimby. I'm a producer on Word of Mouth, and I'm here with Keith Shields. He's executive producer of this program, The Exchange, and this is the last day of our short winter fund drive. Today, when we raise $50,000, we're going to receive an additional $12,000 from a group of dedicated listeners and end this drive. But I've got to tell you, Keith, this is a really big challenge, and it's going to take every fan of The Exchange to help us get there. We've got a little mini goal. We're trying to raise $5,000 by the end of this program. So far, we've raised $450. We're doing pretty good. Let's keep this momentum going. Help us make sure this is our only winter drive by calling right now. The number is 1-888-805-6477.
That's right, Taylor, and you'll be supporting all the programs, including The Exchange. You know, one thing I do every year, Taylor, as the executive producer, I put together our final show of the year. We call it the Newsmakers of the Year show. It's become an annual tradition, so try to figure out some of those top stories. And I go through my little book that keeps track of all the shows that we've done on The Exchange to get some information. And so it's a walk down memory lane. It was just reminding me of some of the great shows we've done. Just even recently, like a popular show that we did on wind power, we really heard great comments from both sides. We put together a show in about 18 hours after we learned of the passing of Warren Rudman, with a who's who of Granite State leaders remembering him. There was a roundtable of Granite Staters from Israel and Palestine recently talking about unrest in the Middle East. And then even yesterday, we had international figure Bishop Gene Robinson on gay marriage. So if you're a fan of The Exchange, of all these kind of angles and programs that we do, support it by going online to nhpr.org and making a donation or giving us a call at 1-888-805-6477.
You know, Keith, you and I both know that we at NHPR are extremely careful with our budget here at the station, because the money underlying that budget comes from you and from your neighbors, from local businesses around the state. We spend the money very responsibly, especially in tough economic times like we're experiencing right now. And, you know, we even try and save on the little things like paper by printing double-sided or using computer screens whenever we can. And so that's something that's very important to us. To bring up programs like The Exchange, you know, they cost us a lot of money. Production costs money. Research requires time and also costs money. We're not asking you to pick up the whole tab, just to do your share. And when you do, if we raise this $50,000 by 7 p.m. tonight, we're going to get another $12,000. It's going to be a huge help to producing the great programming you hear on New Hampshire Public Radio. So please do right now go to our website. You can donate your money there, nhpr.org, or call 1-888-805-6477.
And what we're doing, $50,000 may sound a little like a daunting number. So what we're doing on this final day of our winter fund drive is we're breaking it down, a larger goal into smaller goals. We're making sure that if we get each one of these smaller goals, we will make our larger goal. So this hour, to stay on track, we're trying to raise $5,000 by the end of The Exchange at 10 o'clock. So far, we've raised a little over $450. So we're doing okay, but we need to kind of pick it up a little bit. How about making an additional gift if you've already given this year? Or if you haven't, this is a great time to do it, because your end-of-the-year gift is tax-deductible. So 1-888-805-6477 is the way to support the station.
Everybody here wants to make sure we're giving you shorter fun drives. You know, we want to make sure that we're giving you as much programming as possible. And what that takes is your donation right now. The number to call to support NHPR is 1-888-805-6477 or nhpr.org. And thanks.
Additional support for NHPR comes from Core Gastroenterology of Exeter, offering comprehensive care in the evaluation and treatment of gastrointestinal disorders. CorePhysicians.org, the art of wellness. And the UNH Graduate School, preparing leaders for the 21st century with programs in Durham, Manchester, and online. Information at gradschool.unh.edu. This is NHPR.
This is The Exchange. I'm Laura Kanoy. Today in The Exchange, the latest on the Affordable Care Act in New Hampshire. 2013 is shaping up to be a busy year in terms of how this law will be rolled out here in the Granite State. We invite you to join us. 1-800-892-6477. What questions do you have about what's next for this law here in New Hampshire? How has it affected you so far, either as an individual or as an employer? And what do you hope happens next year, as this 2014 deadline approaches? As I said, 2013 is going to be quite a busy year in terms of health care. Our number for you to join us is 1-800-892-6477. Email is exchange@nhpr.org. And with me in studio is Tom Bunnell, policy analyst for New Hampshire Voices for Health, Senator Jeb Bradley, Republican from Wolfboro and past chairman of the Health and Human Services Committee, and Todd Bookman, NHPR's health reporter. And gentlemen, just before the break, Todd was addressing a question from a listener who was wondering if we were going to do this Medicaid expansion here in New Hampshire. Is that still up in the air, Senator Bradley? As I noted, Governor-elect Hassan wants to do it.
Right. And as I think we've discussed previously on the program and prior programs, this will be one of the largest decisions the legislature faces. Should we expand Medicaid eligibility to 138% of poverty? There are state costs, as Todd talked about. It's roughly $85 million over 10 years. So it's not a huge cost per se, but one of the big questions I think all of us have is, with the looming fiscal talks and the debt ceiling vote that's going to come after that in Washington, Are these 100% targets for the first 3 years and then 90% federal targets? Are they written in stone?
Yeah, that's the promise that the feds have made to the
states. That's the promise. And with trillion-dollar deficits stretching as far as you can see, I, in my position in a state legislature, having served in Washington, I know that whether you're Democrat or Republican, changes are coming to entitlement programs. So, again, another cautionary note. And the thing, another thing that concerns me is that you look at how this is structured. The exchange subsidies, which kick in at 100% of poverty potentially, won't cover somebody below that. And so if there were flexibility from the federal government to allow a state to go to 100% of poverty versus the mandate of 138% of poverty, you might get more buy-in, and states would still have much of that money that Tom was talking about coming back to. But we don't have that flexibility from Washington. And another reason, I think, to sit back and wait, because a lot of states aren't going to jump in right away. And I suspect that when January 1, 2014 arrives and states aren't participating in the exchanges and not every state has signed up for Medicaid, that the Obama administration is going to have to start to look at this through the lens of state legislatures and governors and grant that kind of flexibility for states to be innovative. We don't have that today. So another reason to, you know, sit tight and watch how this unfolds.
So do you think there will be a fair number of states, Senator Bradley, who opt out of this?
I think right now there are probably half the states are not going to participate in the exchange. New Hampshire is one. We passed a statute last year that says no exchange. Now, my understanding is that Governor Hassan wants to participate in something between an exchange and what we have today called a partnership with the feds, which basically would allow New Hampshire's insurance department to regulate insurance carriers in the way it traditionally has. No one has a problem with that, and that's probably a good compromise. But I don't see a lot of states building these exchanges. Remember, we're talking about exchanges that will cover potentially 100 million people and transform, you know, the U.S. economy. This is a huge event, and building the software and the infrastructure and making sure the bugs are out and that it works as intended. And the exchanges are not just for people. They're for small businesses, too. And this has got a huge, huge impact on small businesses. You're seeing people that are at the threshold with 50 employees saying, I'm not sure I want to go to 51 employees because then I'm in a different category covered by the law. Or you're seeing employers that are more than 50 say, you know what, if I'm a restaurant chain, I'm going to only hire for 30 hours a week so that I can avoid the mandates of the law. Again, there are serious unintended consequences likely to occur that we don't even know what they are.
And again, just to repeat, the exchanges allow people to shop around for coverage and at some income levels gives them a federal subsidy.
And much of the money I think that Tom had talked about before, the $2.5 billion, is going to be available to New Hampshire to help the hospitals in the situation that we find ourselves in now through the subsidies that are going to come in the exchange. We don't necessarily, at least on day one, have to expand Medicaid to at least have some eligibility to a significant amount of this federal money.
And let's talk about the Medicaid for a moment, since that's what Jillian, our caller, wanted to know about. And then if you're on the line, by the way, we'll take your call in just a minute, so hang tight. Tom Bunnell, so are we going to do this? Is New Hampshire going to expand Medicaid or not?
Well, again, I think we have a governor-elect who on the campaign trail indicated that she supports the Medicaid expansion. We have a newly constituted New Hampshire House, again, that appears to be open to pragmatically weighing the potential costs and benefits of doing the expansion and making a thoughtful decision about that. And I believe that our New Hampshire Senate is committed to doing the same. I will just say that, again, there is this national expert consulting data analysis group called the Lewin Group, commissioned to do an independent study of the benefits and costs of this expansion. And in their November 15th report, the figures they have for the upcoming biennium, in other words, if New Hampshire elected this Medicaid expansion, During the upcoming legislative session, for the upcoming biennium, the baseline cost overall for the biennium would be $5.8 million in general funds, with $383 million in federal funds coming into New Hampshire. And I will also just add that the Lewin Group also indicates that there are savings, there are creative savings scenarios that do not harm Medicaid beneficiaries, that if allowed by the federal government, and there's some indication that they would reduce that cost to effectively zero or even a savings overall. So this may not cost us anything while providing dramatic – while covering 58,000 people and providing dramatic economic benefits. So if I may, there was an issue raised earlier about the fiscal cliff.
Yeah, what about that? There is a concern that in these fiscal cliff negotiations, the federal government would just say, oops, sorry, just kidding about that Medicaid expansion.
So let's talk about that. And I have three quick points. First, the ACA itself, which includes the Medicaid – The Affordable Care Act itself, which includes the Medicaid expansion – actually reduces the federal deficit by $110 billion over the upcoming 10 years. And that information does not, you know, that's not some wildly leftist conspiracy theory. It comes from the Congressional Budget Office, which is the most widely recognized, credible, independent, nonpartisan source of budget data analysis in the nation. That's the first thing. Second, the White House has very clearly said in private meetings and in public meetings that the Affordable Care Act is among its very top priorities for the upcoming 4 years, that implementation of the ACA is a huge priority. The president and congressional leaders in the Senate are simply not going to agree to any fiscal cliff grand bargain that undermines the ACA or that undermines the Medicaid expansion in particular. So my last point, my third point is, even if Congress did at some future point take action to reduce the federal financing of the Medicaid expansion, the law is now very clear that this expansion is entirely voluntary, meaning a state can elect to get in whenever it wants. It also can elect to get out whenever it wants. So there is no real risk here. And in truth, you know, I think the issue is a little bit of a red herring, this issue.
Fiscal cliff issue.
Yes.
Senator Bradley, real
well,
quick, and then I want to go
I
to our callers.
I would have to, with all due respect, disagree with that. I mean, the way that Washington scores things is on a 10-year plan. So we have a plan that says 100% for 3 years and about 90% for 7 years. What happens in year 11? We don't know that. And to say that just because it's a priority for the Obama administration that it's off the table when we know entitlement reform has to happen with trillion-dollar deficits, I think it's looking at the world through rose-colored glasses that we don't have. Now, maybe by April and May when the budget is in the Senate, we'll have a slightly clearer picture. But I question whether Washington can keep that commitment with these trillion-dollar deficits.
Speaking as someone who served, again, in Congress for several terms, let's go to our callers, folks. And Amy's waiting in Sugar Hill. Hi, Amy. Thanks for hanging on. You're on The Exchange. Go ahead.
Hi. Thank you very much. I'm calling with a question. I'm philosophically very much in favor of the expansion just because I think we need to put all of our heads together to figure out a way to cover these people who need to be covered and haven't been. On the other hand, you know, when I look at the reality of the situation, I wonder about providers and having. Well, what about the doctors and the burden that will place on doctors when all of these people will need to be covered?
Well, and are there enough doctors, right, Amy? I mean,
that's my point.
Yeah, thanks a lot for calling in. Anybody want to jump in on that one, Todd? Are there enough people within the healthcare system right now to take care of the possible 58,000 that Tom talks about?
Well, that's part of the $2.5 billion in federal funding that would come to the state. I mean, the hospitals are very much in support of this. They want these patients. They want to care for them. They are, frankly, already taking care of people that come into their emergency room that don't have health insurance. So if these people are on the Medicaid rolls, the hospitals say they will be sort of more fairly compensated for these people. As to that $2.5 billion, I think what we all need to remember is that's federal money. That's taxpayer money, too. So it's not as though any of this really comes for free.
Well, do the hospitals then, as you said, I mean, I'm sure you're right, want to take these patients, happy to take people who at least have coverage rather than providing free care. On the other hand, Medicaid reimbursements, from what I understand, Todd, are not a one-for-one. You know, a procedure that costs $100, the doctor doesn't necessarily get $100 from Medicaid for providing that.
New Hampshire currently has one of the lowest Medicaid reimbursement rates in the nation. The hospitals are so upset about this that they've actually gone to court. They've sued the government, saying that you need to fairly compensate us for what we're providing for the low-income people in the state that end up in our emergency rooms. We're actually expecting a decision in that federal lawsuit at the end of next week.
Oh, wow. Okay.
So like we started the show with, there's a lot still up in the air regarding all of these pieces, regarding all of healthcare in New Hampshire. There's a lot of balls still floating in the air.
Well, anxiety not just for state officials, but for healthcare reporters, perhaps, Todd.
Sure.
lots of things coming down the pike. Let's take another call if we could. This is Barbara and Bo. Hi, Barbara. You're on The Exchange. Thanks for joining us.
Hi, Laura, and hi, panel. Thank you so much for taking my call this morning.
Sure.
The question that I wanted to ask is I was very blessed in serving my country, so I do get some VA benefits. Very concerned how this American Affordable Care Act is going to affect, if it will affect VA benefits at all, and just wanted to have that question asked.
You know, Barbara, that's a great question, and one I had not thought of. Tom, do you know the answer? Does this affect veterans' benefits in any way?
The answer is that it does not affect veterans' benefits at all.
You're still under the same system. It doesn't change.
Correct.
Yeah. Just indicates to me, Senator Bradley, though, how much we're still unsure about, even though this has been on the books for 2 years.
Well, absolutely. And again, I think that with the number of states not likely to sign up for the exchanges, that raises the issue as to how the federal government's going to implement that. There's an editorial in this morning's Wall Street Journal, of all things, that calls Obamacare, it's a mad, 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 mad Obamacare because of some of the implementation issues. Again, we're transforming nearly 20% of the American economy with this legislation. There are bound to be some whoops moments here that we get unintended consequences, impacts on people and small businesses and the economy in general.
And veterans' concerns, Barbara, and I guess things aren't going to change, so you don't have to worry there. But, you know, this raises a broader question I have for you, Senator Bradley. You started off saying you don't want to just sit here and say no. And I hear you. There'll be surprises, whoopses, you know, hiccups, unintended consequences or costs. On the other hand, a lot of Americans felt, look, this is better than nothing. I mean, the system before was you had a lot of folks with no insurance. You had the hospitals bending over backwards to serve them, and they were losing money left and right. You know, the old system isn't exactly something that, you know, was terrific.
Oh, you're absolutely right. And this is why I think, you know, in terms of the Medicaid expansion, it's too early to say yes, and it's certainly too early to say no. I mean, to take the flip side, we've had a lot of federal money that's come into New Hampshire for 20 years, the disproportionate share or DSH money, sometimes called Medi-Scam money, that's helped hospitals with the charity care that would be targeted toward those people at the 138% of poverty. There's no question it will help hospitals' bottom line. It'll help patients that are, you know, getting insurance, in particular through managed care with a medical home, get preventative care. But at the same time, despite these positives, you've got all the unanswered questions. So what I'm suggesting is a look before you leap approach. See how this is implemented in other states and don't necessarily sign up for something, especially with the uncertainty of the fiscal cliff and the debt ceiling looming in Washington.
All right. We will talk a lot more after a short break. Barbara, thank you for that call. We'll take more in just a minute. We'll be right back.
I'm Bill Martell. I live in Bedford, New Hampshire, and I'm a frequent guest on the Exchange with Laura Kanoy. My view has always been that that the callers are warmly welcomed and encouraged to call on the show and to ask questions, on occasion to have follow-up questions. And I think that reflects how open and engaging the show is, and so welcoming of people calling in with their ideas and trying to push both the guests on the show as well as Laura in terms of issues that ought to be discussed and examined as part of the show.
And Bill Martell is also a wonderful guest when he comes on The Exchange. You can support our program by giving us a call at 1-888-805-6477. I'm Keith Shields, executive producer of the show you're listening to right now, here with Taylor Quimby, producer of Word of Mouth, a show you'll be hearing in about 2.5 hours. And we're going back to programming in just a few minutes, but first, an update on our winter fun drive. It's our final day, and we want to put the proverbial bow on top of this baby. So that way we can have that happen if we raise the additional $50,000 that we need to raise today. When we do, we'll get the additional $12,000 from a group of listeners. But to make that a little more manageable, we're breaking it down into mini goals. So this one is for $5,000. If we raise $5,000 by 10 o'clock today, it'll keep us on track. So far, we've raised $500. So we need to pick up the pace here a little, Taylor. Call and give a gift of $100, $150, or maybe if you can, a Leadership Circle donation of $1,200 at 1-888-805-6477.
And it's especially important right now, Keith, because keeping up with the news does seem more important, and it's definitely more expensive. You know, we have this fluctuating economy, and that requires a special type of diligence to cover responsibly. And then again, you know, we were hearing in Morning Edition this morning, you look at the volatility in the Middle East. There are incredibly important things happening there, and it's not cheap to have reporters and equipment on location. And what we don't want anybody to have to do is make a choice between covering two equally important stories because the resources aren't there for both. We've always been able to give you comprehensive coverage. We've never had to choose like that, and it's because you supported NHPR. All it takes to become a member is $60, $100, or $150, and that money will pay for NHPR to give you the news next year. The number to call, 1-888-805-6477.
And people might ask, well, what do you really need to do to support the exchange? I mean, you don't have to pay national dues here. I have friends who are actually surprised to hear that our staff generally comes in very early and stays late. You know, they think we actually meet about 8:30, we have a little coffee, we do the show, and about 10:30 we say see you tomorrow.
Nice.
It'd be nice. But no, there's a lot more that happens, you know, after the credits air. You know, there's the fishing through the papers and the websites and the listener feedback to find the best shows. You know, we are pulling together files every single day on different topics, you know, whether it's newspaper reports or blogs or entries or whatever, so that our host Laura Kanoy can be up to date on every single way in terms of the issue. Our producer Ellen Grimm talks to many people to find the best and most relevant balanced guests for the show, and then we have to do it the next day as well. So all that comes at a financial cost, and your support helps defer it by calling 1-888-805-6477.
And you know, Keith, a great way to show off your love of public radio and the exchange is with a donation of $120. That gets you the NHPR member mug, which, aside from, I think, being quite beautiful and functional, does make a statement to anybody who, say, comes over for coffee or tea. You know, when you plop this mug in front of a friend and fellow listener, maybe you'll inspire them to make a gift as well. This year's mug features pumpkins and an apple tree, but I think the most important thing is that it says New Hampshire Public Radio. The mug is yours when you donate $120, so go online, check out that mug right now at nhpr.org and pledge there. Or, if you'd like, you can also call the number 1-888-805-6477 to support this great programming.
And, you know, we say this number, it always reminds me that every single day on the exchange, we rely on people to call in or email into the show because they elevate the conversation. We always say that it's the callers and the listeners who bring a good conversation to a great conversation. They give their different perspectives. They give their questions that we might not have thought of. We rely on that every single day. So what we're doing today is we're relying on you in a different way. For a financial support, 1-888-805-6477. Call in today like you do every day on the exchange.
We've got this mini challenge going right now, and it is essential that we hit these goals so we can stay on track and prevent having to come on the air for future winter fund drives that we'd rather be able to do away with and just bring you great programming. Trying to raise $5,000 by 10 a.m. So far, we've raised a little more than $500. A long ways to go, so call now. 1-888-805-6477 or go online nhpr.org.
Support for NHPR comes from UR members and Comcast Business Class, provider of internet, voice, TV, and Ethernet solutions that keep pace with the growth of your business. More information at 800-501-6000. And Franklin Pierce University, a leader in adult education, offering a Bachelor of Science in Healthcare Administration. New term begins in January. Information at franklinpierce.edu. This is NHPR.
This is The Exchange. I'm Laura Kanoy. Today in The Exchange, an overview of the affordable health care law in New Hampshire, how it may proceed here in the Granite State over the new year, given that 2014 is the deadline in the law for full implementation. We've been looking at this from all the angles, how it's been playing out here in the Granite State. Our number for you to join us is 1-800-892-6477. Email is exchange at nhpr.org. We have three guests with us, Todd Bookman, Senator Jeb Bradley, and Tom Bunnell with New Hampshire Voices for Health. And gentlemen, as we get ready to close out the hour, I did want to make sure we looked at some of the unique issues, Todd, that New Hampshire faces with this Medicaid expansion that we've talked about. I mean, every state is looking at this issue in terms of its own particulars, but there's some tricky particulars here in New Hampshire.
Yeah, there's two that come to mind. First is the hospital lawsuit against the state, which we mentioned a little bit earlier. This is the hospitals arguing that the state is basically taxing them for the right to treat uninsured people, and we'll expect some movement on that lawsuit shortly. The other big issue is the state's transition to a managed care model for Medicaid. This is something that basically every other state does in one form or another already, have an outside group, either for-profit or nonprofit, manage the care for Medicaid patients, basically like accept a lump sum for each person and then try to keep them healthy by coordinating care. But to get this program up and running, you need the hospitals and providers to basically set rates with these outside groups. They're balking right now, saying, well, we want to see what happens with this lawsuit before we get a resolution there. We're not going to sort of lock in any set payments. So there's a real sort of wait-and-see attitude in that matter also.
Wow, right. And that lawsuit is before the state Supreme Court. Is that right, Todd?
No, that's in front of the federal court.
Oh, really? Okay. All right. Well, and Tom Bunnell, what about one of those pieces that Todd mentioned, the transition to managed Medicaid? I know it sounds very bureaucratic, but it's a huge deal. And Todd's right. Almost every other state does it this way. I think there are one or two exceptions.
So Medicaid managed care is designed to make our Medicaid system more efficient and more cost effective. And there are three Medicaid managed care organizations with which New Hampshire has current contracts. Those MCOs built the Medicaid expansion into their models. So there are now questions about whether Medicaid managed care can be effective or even succeed in New Hampshire without actually doing the Medicaid expansion. So that's one issue. And I will say that in terms of the hospital's lawsuit, and there are a couple of different issues in that lawsuit. The hospital systems appear to be taking a posture about how do we solve our circumstance? What solutions are there? And they are embracing the Medicaid expansion opportunity as one piece of the solution that would help them and work for them.
Wow. Senator Bradley.
Well, I was the sponsor of the managed care legislation, the Medicaid reform legislation, and as people have noted, a number of other states do, and it was high time New Hampshire did it. It's not only by having a medical home and better primary and preventative care for Medicaid patients, it will not only improve the quality of their care, but will allow the state over time to save hopefully millions of dollars, whether we make this expansion or not. It's unfortunate that it's been caught up in the hospital lawsuit situation. The hospitals are going to benefit in the short term by a Medicare reimbursement rate for primary care physicians starting January 1st. So that in and of itself is going to resolve some, I hope, of the hospital's funding situation. I think that we know the situation is valid for the hospitals. They're basically reimbursed at 55% roughly for a dollar's worth of cost for Medicaid patients. That's something that
that's pretty low.
It is very low. And so I think that there's a recognition by Governor Hassan, by folks like me, folks in the House, that we've got to try to resolve this situation in a way that works for the state budget at the same time that it works for the hospitals. And quite frankly, that's one of the top priorities for me in this budget. Aside from the decision whether to expand Medicaid, there are interesting discussions going on right now with some creative thoughts out there. I hope they come to fruit. And I think people on both sides are approaching it finally with a little goodwill to trying to resolve it.
Yeah, boy, there'll be lots of pressures on the budget, though, because it's been so tight for so long, Senator Bradley. there's probably be other constituencies, other interests who say, look, we need this too. You know, the mental health system, the prisons, education, you name it.
Disabled wait list, folks. I mean, the budget pressures are going to be just as significant in 2013 as they were in 2011, quite frankly, because the economy is growing a little bit, but so slowly that revenue is not growing, and that's the problem.
Well, hard to believe 2013 is really just 2 or 3 weeks away, and as we said at the outset, 2013 is a big year for this law because, Todd Bookman, 2014 is the year that this thing is supposed to be fully implemented. So just remind us what the end goal supposedly is in 2014 when we turn the clock to that year.
So January 1st, 2014, everyone will need to have health insurance in the state of New Hampshire. If you don't have health insurance, you'll have to pay a small tax that eventually will grow. We'll see the exchanges up and running. This is how individuals and small businesses will now purchase their insurance. Those actually sort of go live in October, sort of a test period, and then they're off and running. In 2014, we'll see the end of denial of pre-existing conditions for coverage. So that's a sort of thing that is very popular with people. That'll finally kick in 2014. And then we'll see about Medicaid expansion. That doesn't necessarily have to start 2014. The state can delay that decision for a year, for 2 years, for 3 years, but that impacts people if they choose to not expand. There's still a lot of people in New Hampshire that then would not have access to care.
Wow. Your expectations for this year, Tom Bunnell, what do you hope happens in 2013 to get to that ultimate 2014 goal?
I think my expectation, building off what Senator Bradley shared earlier, is that New Hampshire will likely have – well, we will have a federally facilitated exchange come 2014, and the infrastructure will be being built for that during the year 2013, but also that it appears that there is likely to be a partnership between our state government and the federal government over the creation of that federally facilitated exchange. And I think there is certain to be lively and thoughtful discussion based on the pros and cons and projected costs and benefits of the Medicaid expansion. We think, using the Lewin Group numbers that are coming out, and there will be a second report soon showing economic effects and benefits.
Yeah, I almost want to say Happy New Year to all of you, but how about busy Happy New Year? Senator Bradley, what's coming up immediately for you?
Well, again...
you're not going to be chair of the Health Committee this time.
No, I won't be chair of the Health Committee, but, you know, the Senate works in a very collegial fashion. It's, 13 Republicans and 11 Democrats this year, so we all are going to have to get along and act like adults and try to work in a bipartisan fashion and hopefully approach both the hospital lawsuit and the discussion about the Medicaid expansion in as rational and fact-based approach as possible. As I said at the outset, there are reasons to say yes to the expansion. There are also significant reasons to say no to the expansion, or, in my view, to say let's take a wait-and-see approach and see how it sugars off in other states. And I think that may, at this point, be the more realistic way to proceed. But, you know, let's have, if you want to invite me back on in a couple of months when we see how the budget situation's evolving, I'm happy to come on and talk about it then, because we may have a little bit more clarity, although we may not,
given
on
the fiscal cliff
and
right.
debt ceiling vote. Those are critical issues for all of us as Americans and for each of the 50 states. And that's a critical issue, how we build this budget.
All right. Well, I have the feeling this is not our last conversation on this topic. I want to thank all three of you very much for coming in. Thanks a lot.
Thank you, Laura.
Thank you, and Merry Christmas.
The Exchange is a production of NHPR. Let's check in real quick now with our super short December fun drive.
And thanks, Laura, for another great show. I'm Keith Shields, executive producer for The Exchange, here with word of mouth producer Taylor Quimby. And it's our final day of our winter fun drive. We're working on a mini goal this hour of $5,000 by 10 a.m. today. So far, we're at $1,000. We got to pick up the pace here a little, but when we make this goal, it'll keep us on track for our larger goal today and get the additional $12,000 to balance our books. We really want to make this goal, so this is our only winter fun drive. We'd really hate to come back in January and February. We'd rather focus on covering the new legislative year. That's why we need your call right now. Make your gift online at nhpr.org or give us a call at 1-888-888-888. 805-6477.
One of the great things about NHPR is that every day I think there's new people that are sort of finding out about the station, finding out about our programming. Maybe you started listening and you become reliant on the excellent news coverage you hear. Maybe you love Car Talk or This American Life, Radio Lab, you know, some of our great weekend programming. Well, either way, we're glad you found us and we welcome you to the fold. However, unlike a theater that sells tickets or a magazine that sells subscriptions, we have no idea who's listening to the station until you make a donation and support the service you enjoy. These on-air fund drives are the only way we really have to find out who you are. So please introduce yourself. Say hello by going online to nhpr.org or calling 1-888-805-6477. And when you do, it's going to make you feel really great. It's a big part of the holiday spirit of giving.
How many times a week do you listen to my show, The Exchange? You know, we make a joke on this show that, you know, we do the show and then 2 days later, you know, we completely forget about what we've done at the beginning of the week. But you, the listener, you're a lot more on point. You remember what we've done last week, last month. You talk about the callers, the interesting callers who call in, or the better tete-a-tetes that you've heard, or an important point, something you learned from The Exchange that you never knew before. Well, when thinking about how much to give, how about looking, say, at the number of times you listen a week or the number of new things that you learn from the show each week and attach a monetary value to that and give us a call with that amount. That's you doing your part in supporting The Exchange at 1-888-805-6477 or online at nhpr.org.
And remember, if we raise $50,000 by 7 p.m. tonight, we're going to receive an extra $12,000 from Bill Chapman, Mary Cowan, and Penny Patu and Milo Pike. And you know, we had a similar challenge during our fall fund drive, and we came a little short, and we didn't get that extra cash. And that would have gone straight to programming. It would have helped make NHPR stronger. We're obviously still doing really good, but the thing is, we could use that extra $12,000, and not everybody gets a second chance like this. Why don't you join this group of loyal donors and help us be that much stronger in the new year? The number to call is 1-888-805-6477 or nhpr.org.
How about a gift of $120? We'd thank you with the NHPR member card. It's a great, great resource to have. You get your money back so quickly. What you do is you have this card. There's so many, you know, buy one, get one free or two for one deals on the card at so many restaurants and events and stores around the state. And so you're really going to get your money back very quickly if you go out maybe, say, six times in the year and you use your member card. You're going to flash your member card. You're going to show that you're a supporter of the news and information that you rely on every single day. You know, especially in January, Taylor, where I know my wallet is kind of having a little hang.